second item, which is to consider the proposed amendments to the basin plan for the Lamont region. I have another chair's statement to read for this. I apologize. It says, this is the time and place for the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, Lamont region, to hold a public hearing on proposed amendments to the Water Quality Control Plan for the Lamont region and a substitute environmental document for the amendment. The amendments, if adopted, would update cited state and regional board plans and policies, correct errors, add mixing zone provisions, modify waste discharge prohibitions and exemptions, clarify the applicability of our regulations. The order of presentation for this hearing will be as follows. First, testimony by staff. Second, testimony by public agencies. And third, testimony by interested persons. All persons who wish to participate and have not yet submitted an appearance card are requested to do so now. Following public testimony and discussion by board members, the board will consider adopting a resolution that approves the substitute environmental document and the proposed amendments. This hearing will not be conducted according to the technical rules of evidence. The board will accept any testimony that is reasonably relevant to the matter under consideration. I may impose reasonable time limits and may require groups to choose a single spokesperson. We ask each person testifying to come to the lectern when you speak and begin by stating your name, address, and who you represent. So that will start with the staff presentation.
Thank you, Dr. Horn and members of the board. My name is Chuck Curtis, and I'm a supervising engineer here in your South Lake Tahoe office. Tonight, staff scientist Bob Larson and I will be presenting these proposed basin plan amendments and the associated environmental document for your consideration. I'm very pleased to submit these amendments for your approval. Our basin plan has now received a significant revision in the last 20 years. There's more work to do on the basin plan, but this set of amendments is a good start. Staff believes the proposed amendments will streamline application of our regulations, provide the board more flexibility to consider under what circumstances discharges may be allowed, and will improve the clarity and consistency of our regulations. With that theme of consistency and clarity, I'd like to bring to your attention a few late additions. These additions should be in your agenda packets. First, there's a single sheet, double-sided, that has a number of proposed changes. Number one is a change to the proposed wording of an exemption criterion to be clear that beneficial uses must be protected. Now, there's a typo on this late edition sheet. The first page number should be 2-63, not 2-64. So this same criterion is found in the Truckee River, Little Truckee River, Carson, Walker, and the Tahoe sections of the basin plan, as well as our region-wide prohibitions. Number two is a similar change for a prohibition in the Truckee and Little Truckee River Hydrologic Unit. Number three changes a bulleted list of findings to a lettered list for ease of reference. Number four is a similar change to those earlier changes, ensuring that beneficial uses will be protected. Number five also makes it clear that beneficial uses must be not adversely affected. Number six changes a bulleted list to a lettered list for ease of reference. And number seven changes the bulleted list to a numbered list for ease of reference. The next late addition includes a comment letter from William Thomas, a response letter, and staff responses to his comments. Although the comment letter was received after the comment period closed, we chose to include the letter and our responses. Now, to the meat of the presentation. The proposed amendments before you tonight address five main areas. Anti-degradation policy reference and application inconsistencies, the addition of mixing zone provisions, cleanup of the prohibitions and exemptions, revision of the Lake Tahoe chapter, and updating policy references and correcting typographical and other errors. First, the anti-degradation policy. The proposed changes clarify and unify reference to the State Water Board's statement of policy with respect to maintaining high-quality waters, as the anti-degradation policy, as it's commonly known. There's no change in the state or federal anti-degradation policies themselves with this change. It simply clarifies the application of the policy and the name of the policy. Next is the addition of the mixing zone policy. The State Water Board added a mixing zone policy as part of its implementation plan for toxic discharges to waters of the U.S. That policy applies to and is in effect in the Lahontan region, and we're acknowledging that policy, but the amendments go further to add provisions that will allow the board to grant mixing zones for those constituents that are not covered in the state's policy, such as for conventional pollutants, and to waters other than waters of the U.S., such as to groundwaters, and those waters where it's been determined that the Clean Water Act does not apply. Now for the waste discharge prohibitions and exemption criteria. Cleaning up the inconsistencies, duplication, and conflicting prohibitions and exemptions in the basin plan was the primary impetus for this set of basin plan amendments. As part of that, we are proposing a new prohibition on unauthorized discharges that will remove several hurdles to bringing prosecution for unpermitted discharges. And we are providing the board more flexibility in allowing certain discharges or discharges in certain areas. That little slide was very quick and an awful lot of work, but I think that sums it up for us. Now, to streamline the applicability of our waste discharge prohibition exemptions for low-threat discharges, we're proposing automatic exemptions where conditions to protect water quality and beneficial uses are in place. This will reduce staff and board time on discharges that pose little or no threat to water quality. And now I'd like to turn the presentation over to Bob Larson to discuss the Lake Tahoe chapter changes, the environmental document, and comments that we received on the document. That was good.
That was. It's like when I did this last time, I got the short part.
Now I got the long
part. Good evening, Bob Larson, Senior Environmental Scientist. As in November, I do have the pleasure of wrapping up this presentation on the proposed amendments. I have about a dozen slides, like Chuck's spelled seven. I have starting with this quick overview of the proposed changes to the Lake Tahoe chapter, followed by a discussion of the environmental documentation effort, and ending with a summary of comments received and our responses to those comments. So as we discussed in November, Chapter 5 of our Basin Plan is dedicated to water quality standards and control measures for the Lake Tahoe Basin. And the current language in the chapter is based on the 1989 Clean Water Act Section 208 Water Quality Management Plan. The chapter includes development restrictions, impervious coverage policy, and other land use regulations that were described in that 1989 208 plan. The Water Board, TRPA, and the US EPA have approved a number of updated policies and planning documents since then, including the Lake Tahoe TMDL, the TRPA plan, TRPA Regional Plan Update, and a revised 208 plan. With the approval of these updated planning documents, our basin plan is now inconsistent with current regulatory policy in the Lake Tahoe region. And so to address this, the proposed amendments remove all the references to the 1989-208 plan and the associated policies, programs, and restrictions, while leaving language unrelated to the 208 plan mostly unchanged. Similar to the other sections of the basin plan, the amendments do include edits to the waste discharge prohibitions to clarify the application of those prohibitions and the associated exemption criteria. Primarily, those changes will simplify the exemption process for water quality improvement efforts and other restoration projects while retaining the intent of the existing prohibitions. Moving on to the environmental documentation, to assess the potential environmental impact associated with the proposed amendments, Water Board staff prepared a substitute environmental document, or SED. The document was included in the board's agenda package, and the resolution staff is asking the board to adopt will certify that the SED is compliant with applicable requirements. This and the following two slides summarize the SED findings. Many of the proposed amendments are clarifications and updates that will not cause any direct or indirect physical changes in the environment, while others were evaluated by separate environmental analyses. The edits that Chuck described clarifying the anti-degradation policy, the errata correction, and policy updates are in this first category. Because these changes will not have any foreseeable impact on the environment, they were dismissed from detailed consideration in the SED. As for the Chapter 5 changes, TRPA conducted a detailed environmental analysis during its regional plan update process on the plan and associated 208 plan, and the State Water Board relied on that assessment when it approved the 208 plan last year. The amendments that we're proposing to Chapter 5 simply align the basin plan with the approved 208 plan that was already subject to environmental review, and thus no further review is required for those amendments. Similarly, the Water Board certified an SED for the pesticide prohibition language over 2 years ago, and the proposed amendments are consistent with that amendment that was considered in the analysis, and the additional and any additional environmental review is not required. Two of the proposed amendments are linked to potential physical changes in the environment, so they were more thoroughly evaluated in the SED. First, Water Board staff assessed the potential environmental impacts associated with the mixing zone provisions. Any potential mixing zone considered by the Water Board must meet the conditions defined in the proposed amendment language, which are summarized here. In general, mixing zones must be as small as practicable, not overlap with other approved mixing zones or compromise the integrity of the water body, and not be located near any drinking water intake. The mixing zone cannot dominate the receiving water, nor can it adversely impact habitat or cause a condition of nuisance to any receptor. Given the stringent conditions specified for allowing mixing zones, staff found in the environmental document that the proposed mixing zone amendments will not have any adverse effects on the environment. The SED also considered the potential impacts associated with the changes in waste discharge prohibitions and the associated exemption criteria. Like mixing zones, the proposed language includes specific criteria that must be met before a prohibition exemption can be granted. Generally, an exemption cannot be allowed unless it can be shown that doing so will not cause an adverse impact on beneficial uses, that there are no reasonable alternatives to the discharge, and that appropriate management practices and mitigation measures are incorporated into the project. Considering the conditions required for prohibition exemptions, staff found that the proposed amendment will not have any adverse environmental impacts. On to public comments. We received 4 individual comment letters, and the following slides summarize those comments that we received and our response to those comments. First is a letter submitted by David Shaw on behalf of the Squaw Valley Ski Holdings. In his letter, Mr. Shaw requested that the board consider using geomorphic indicators to define floodplain areas subject to basin plan requirements, rather than using established floodplain maps. Because that approach might allow discharges to floodplain areas already impacted by development that could further restrict floodplain function, staff firmly believe that the established floodplain maps provide a more appropriate and protective floodplain definition. A letter from the Tahoe Water Suppliers Association reiterated their previously stated concerns related to the pesticide prohibition and the associated exemption. In general, the association would prefer that the Water Board not allow any aquatic pesticide use in Lake Tahoe and ask that the Water Board require other invasive species control measures be implemented before considering pesticide options. I've been told by staff involved with the pesticide amendment that the Board is familiar with these concerns and that the staff worked closely with the Tahoe Water Suppliers Association during the pesticide amendment adoption process to respond to the identified issues. The proposed changes do not substantively alter the previously adopted pesticide amendment, but rather just clarify those who may apply for such an exemption. The existing language already requires project proponents to consider non-chemical methods and provides the board the flexibility to allow the use of aquatic pesticides only under stringent conditions. Those conditions do include notification requirements to ensure that the water purveyors are made aware of any potential project that could affect their operations. The Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority submitted a letter regarding the proposed language in Chapter 4.4. We added some language that describes solar biosolids dewatering beds. The letter provides some useful information regarding Victor Valley's experience and research with solar drying beds and suggested that the relative impacts of those activities be more closely examined. We do agree that the impacts need to be evaluated on a case-by-case basis, and the relatively insignificant impacts that are noted by Victor Valley, for instance, are due to the fact that their beds are lined. Victor Valley's letter goes further to suggest language could be added to minimize impacts to groundwater and expresses concern about draft language urging alternatives to wastewater percolation be considered. In response to these concerns, staff made minor adjustments to the proposed language to acknowledge the benefits of lined drying beds and ensure that the language is advisory rather than compulsory. Finally, Mr. William Thomas submitted the letter, expressing concern that there were many proposed substantive changes and that there have been limited opportunities for public engagement on these important issues. As I just discussed in my review of the environmental analysis, most of the amendments are editorial and semantic. The two changes that could be considered substantive, mixing zones and prohibition language, were fully evaluated and given several public review and comment periods. There has been ample opportunity for the public and stakeholders to engage in this amendment process. Staff held two CEQA scoping meetings in February and March of 2013 that introduced the bulk of the proposed amendment language. We held public workshops in February, March, and November of last year to review the changes and gather feedback from the board and interested parties. Finally, we released the proposed amendments in late January of this year and requested comments on the proposed language and the associated environmental analysis. So we feel that there has been a comprehensive public engagement process for these amendments. Mr. Thomas's letter also requested that the board consider adjusting the fecal coliform objective as part of this amendment package. Staff are aware of Mr. Thomas's concerns related to the coliform standards and are undertaking a detailed assessment of whether changes are warranted. This involves gathering data reviewing that data in the context of the existing objectives, new US EPA criteria, and the State Water Board's proposed bacteria objectives. In short, we're working on that effort, but any change to the bacteria objective will require an independent process that fully evaluates the environmental impacts associated with such an amendment. That more or less wraps up the comments and our responses and my presentation. Staff have worked hard, as Chuck indicated, to bring this amendment package to the board. We've done our best to vet the proposed amendments in a publicly transparent process. We've conducted the required environmental analysis and have responded to all identified comments and concerns. We do appreciate the help of a number of staff here in-house that provided some valuable input and are grateful to those members of the community who did take the time to submit comments. At this time, staff would like to recommend that the board adopt the proposed resolution that will certify the substitute environmental document and approve the proposed basin plan amendments. If the board chooses to follow this staff recommendation, we just want to highlight the next steps in the process. We will then work to finalize the administrative record and forward the package to the State Water Board for approval. The amendments would then be considered by the Office of Administrative Law, and if necessary, the US EPA will need to consider what provisions are applicable for review under their authority. This amendment has been a long time coming, as Chuck said. It's been a lot of work, and we're pretty happy to be here today to see this happen. I hope this is just the first of many times we have an opportunity to fine-tune our basin plan. And so, again, we recommend that the board approve the proposed resolution so we can move forward with these next steps.
Thank you. Okay, my inclination is to go to speaker cards and hold board questions until after the other speakers. I might make sure that's okay with all the other board members. Yes, it is. Okay, so the first speaker card I have is for Mr. Barry Hill from the U.S. Forest Service.
Thank you, members of the board, for the opportunity to speak to you tonight. My name is Barry Hill. My address is 424 Mills Drive in Benicia, California. And I'm here representing the U.S. Forest Service. We're not proposing any changes to the basin plan language. We were involved with this, I guess it was a year or so ago, and we haven't really been involved lately. We didn't submit any written comments on this version. I did want to take this opportunity to point out that the changes do refer to the need for permitting or regulatory actions for all vegetation management actions by the Forest Service, and that's our current practice. That's nothing really new. We're fine with that. But I did want to point out that there are a lot of other activities that we have on the National Forest System that are currently not being treated under any similar regulatory approach. So we've had some initial discussions with your staff, and we're certainly interested in pushing forward to achieve some kind of a regulatory approach that would include the other types of activities, which would include, for example, range management, roads unrelated to vegetation management, recreation. We feel these are important activities that do have the potential for impact on water quality. As most of you know, we went through a fairly long effort to get these activities covered under a regulatory action by the state board, and that hasn't happened yet, and we're certainly interested in working with your staff to move this forward at the regional level. Thank you.
Madonna Dunbar.
Good evening, members of the Water Board. My name is Madonna Dunbar. I live at 954 Guerin Street, Incline Village, Nevada. I'm the executive director of the Tahoe Water Suppliers Association, and I also serve as the resource conservationist for Incline Village General Improvement District. I've spoken to you before. I've spoken at the state board as well. I would like to acknowledge your having listened to us in the past. I may touch on some points again that have been discussed before, but we feel very strongly at the Tahoe Water Suppliers Association about the potential use of pesticides in Lake Tahoe. I also would like to acknowledge we have worked very closely with staff. We appreciate the mitigations that have been incorporated in the potential review process of notification and the ability to comment and offer mitigations. There are 160,000 public water systems in the United States. There are 60 of those that hold a filtration exemption status. Six of those 60 out of the 160 are here at Lake Tahoe, and all six are Tahoe Water Supplier Association members who use Lake Tahoe before the source of drinking water. It is highly unusual for the EPA to have granted filtration exemption to a drinking water provider located in a watershed with multiple use, such as Tahoe. The six filtration exemption permits that are held here by the TWSA members attest to the extremely high quality of Lake Tahoe's drinking water. The regulatory revisions being implemented by the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board, potentially allowing for the direct introduction of an herbicide into an open water application at Lake Tahoe, are of paramount concern to the water suppliers. We do not concur fully that the substitute environmental document for the Lahontan Basin Plan adequately addresses the concerns for utility services and drinking water quality. Tahoe's municipal water systems are not designed to, nor are they effective at removing a chemical contaminant They are designed to treat biological contaminants such as virus or bacteria. We have been supporting members of the efforts of the Lake Tahoe Aquatic Invasive Species Working Groups. We fully acknowledge the challenge that lies ahead in successfully managing aquatic invasive species at Lake Tahoe. However, the water providers cannot support the direct introduction of any chemical agent into Lake Tahoe as a management tool for aquatic invasive weeds. I would like to quote Joanne Marchetta, the executive director of the TRPA, from her guest column that was published on March 27th here in the Tahoe Basin. Tahoe is on a world stage environmentally for how we protect both the urban and natural worlds for our future generations. Few alpine lakes, which claim such awe-inspiring beauty and pristine conditions, also share the complexity of being a year-round vacation destination surrounded by diverse communities. Lake Tahoe is one of just three lakes on the West Coast designated as Outstanding Natural Resource Waters, and is the only one outside the National Park System with a mix of public and private property ringed by highways and a population in the tens of thousands. These are among many of the reasons why Tahoe's environmental initiatives are so often used as models and drivers of environmental innovation. Our efforts to establish equilibrium between the human and natural environments provides both inspiration and instruction for other communities grappling with similar issues. When we work to protect our shores, sometimes we are serving more than our beloved lake. We are setting an example of environmental stewardship for others far and wide. So at this point, it's acknowledged that the revised basin plan, which has still not received the final EPA approval, would allow for a potential herbicide application pending a full project review. But the question I ask is, how is Tahoe, as a Tier 3 Outstanding Natural Resource Water, going to be fully differentiated from other water bodies and afforded the highest level of protection of any water body in the nation if herbicides can be used to eradicate weeds in an open water situation? Invasive weeds can be successfully managed using non-chemical methods. The approval of the potential use for herbicides for weed control in Lake Tahoe does not highlight innovation or stewardship. It's a cheaper way out of a problem we have created. The Clean Water Act, Regulation 40 CFR 131.12A3, requires that water quality be maintained and protected in outstanding natural resource waters. EPA interprets this provision to mean no new or increased discharges to ONRWs and no new or increased discharge to tributaries to ONRWs that would result in lower water quality in the ONRW. The only exception to this prohibition, as discussed in the preamble and has been discussed with the pesticide issue here before, permits states to allow some limited activities that result in a temporary or short-term change in the water quality of the ONRW. Such activities must not permanently degrade water quality. And I think this is here where the water providers differ with some of the other opinions on how long a chemical lasts and does it permanently degrade water quality. We feel that herbicides may dilute, they may degrade over time, but they do not simply disappear. In March 2014, there was new research published from the USGS, published in the journal Environmental Toxicology and Chemistry, which revealed that both air and rain samples in the Midwestern United States were contaminated with Roundup and other agricultural chemicals more than 75% of the time in some areas. I highlight the word rain because they had to come from the ground, be picked up and held in the air over a period of time. The customer confidence we have built in Tahoe Tap and in our community over the outstanding drinking water we have here at Lake Tahoe probably cannot be replaced if herbicides are directly introduced into Lake Tahoe. Again, I ask a question. Lake Tahoe's Tier 3 Outstanding Natural Resource Water designation demands that innovation and environmental stewardship drive the handling of invasive weeds in the aquatic invasive species management programs. California Water Code Section 106 considers by law that drinking water is the highest beneficial use of the waters of the state, then followed by irrigation. So on behalf of the water providers, I wish to offer that chemical methods are neither temporary nor an innovative way to handle the weed problem at Lake Tahoe, nor the use of such in the water that is of such outstanding quality that we have filtration exemption permits here at Lake Tahoe. It does not is not protective of the highest beneficial uses of the waters of Lake Tahoe. I really thank you for your time and for listening to me.
Anybody have anything to ask or respond?
I'd just like to say your comments would be, I think, most appropriate when there is an actual proposal in front of the board to have a pesticide application in the lake. I mean, what we are trying to do here is to adopt a policy for the whole Lahontan region, which reaches from Cedarville down to Lancaster, Palmdale, Victorville, Barstow.
My intent today was not to have you not vote. However, my water supplier board feels strongly enough about this issue that
we
they wanted it to go on record.
Exactly.
Yeah, and we will, if and when a project comes forth, we will be at the table.
I'm sure you will. But I just want you to know that, I mean, there are public health concerns with the use of pesticides, that using pesticides protects public health in some areas for some instances. So,
yes.
For example, to control West Nile virus. I mean,
yes.
We just, right now, the way the basin plan is written, we just have to look the other way. And
yes.
To control cyanobacteria. I mean, so...
our comments are specifically concerns about...
So just so you understand...
Not vector control.
We are adopting a policy. We have... Our policy is aimed at the whole
mm-hmm.
basin. Not... We are not the Lake Tahoe Regional Water Quality Control Board.
Yes. We understand that, and we do not have objections to vector control as necessary for public health for an emergency chemical use if we end up with zebra and quagga mussels. There's no issue there. Our concern is the potential of precedent being set for ongoing use for the weeds, for aquatic invasive weeds specifically,
okay.
And at Lake Tahoe. So I thank you for explaining to me the broader spectrum and need of your board tonight, and I really do appreciate you listening to me. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, those are our comment cards. Open it up for board comments or questions. Mr. Humphrey?
I don't have any questions. Basically, my only comment is to say this is a humongous amount of work that obviously went into proposing or developing these amendments, and I thank the staff for the many, many hours I'm sure that went into this. I think this is very thoroughly done, and I commend you for your job.
There's a lot of people.
I would imagine. Take a notch.
I have to agree, the staff has done just a remarkable job here on the public input, working with the interested parties and boards and the body of mayors. And thank you for setting me, showing us the larger picture, the entire region. But yes, it's as permits, people are looking at specific projects that will have to be addressed.
Ms. Cox? Well, I appreciate the attention to the mixing zones as well as the consideration of VBWRA's comments on the solar drying beds. I think that shows the approach that this process didn't take place in a silo, but that you truly were looking for an iterative process on this effort. So thank you for that.
Mr. Sandel?
I have two comments. One was to applaud the use of color in showing where change was made. I thought it was revelatory. It really made it a lot easier to see what was going on. And then it also made it easy to see that you're taking out massive sections for various treatment plants. And I was wondering, they didn't seem to be put back in. So could somebody explain what happened there?
Yes, that was by design. Our treatment plants change as our populations change. And The descriptions of the wastewater treatment facilities and the basin plan were as of 1990-something or earlier, and they were dated. In trying to update those, we realized that if we put a detailed description of what things are like in 2014, they're going to be likewise dated. And so we took the approach of just a general description of the types of facilities that we have and the processes in general that they use and where they are in the communities that they serve.
Thank you.
Is that it?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if we wanted to talk about it all. I'm sorry.
I haven't had a chance to ask my question.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Thank you. So I agree with the comments started by Mr. Humphrey and echoed by the other staff members. I really appreciate, I understand how much work went into this and appreciate all the work. Much appreciated. It's been a long time in the works, and I know that you've also spent hours and hours and hours listening to various stakeholders and trying to take their concerns into consideration. So thank you for that. I, of course, am interested in this geomorphic question. And Chuck's ready! This is great. Because it seems to me that in some, well, I know the FEMA maps are way out of date. So saying that the lines are drawn, we're doing this because that's how FEMA does it, isn't, to me, a very good explanation.
No, and although that was the simple way that Bob explained it, it is more nuanced than that. Any project proponent can provide evidence of what the actual 100-year floodplain is in the area of their project. And, you know, if they're appropriately qualified to make that evaluation. And that's based on a statistical flood, you know, so a flood that would expect to have a frequency of once every 100 years. So that volume of water moving through the watershed or through that that floodplain channel, you know, is not bound just by a FEMA map because the topography changes, the watershed changes. So we're not saying we're bound by that map. But what we are saying is that because part of the floodplain now doesn't look like a floodplain because it's got a parking lot and a hotel on it, from our standpoint, we think that, yes, there was development in the floodplain, and we think that additional development in that floodplain should be prevented or restricted, you know, highly restricted because of its effect on flood flow routing and the adverse effects of, you know, of restricting the floodplain. So I think the argument that where they were coming from is, you know, where you've got a developed part of the floodplain, you shouldn't consider your prohibition as applicable in that area. And we say, no, we think it's very much applicable in that area because we want to protect what floodplain capacity and function is left.
That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, it just seems to me that if, I mean, I just don't think the FEMA lines are, you know, anything in concrete or whatever.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, and if somebody has good evidence for a different way to draw the line, then we should be able to consider.
I agree with you 100%.
Good. Hey, any other comments or questions? So with that, do I hear an motion from?
Well, I just wanted to let the board know that I think it was maybe not mentioned during some of the briefings about EPA has some concerns about the prohibition and the exemptions, they're not quite sure yet how to treat those. It's part of an ongoing discussion that we're having with US EPA on variances and whether or not we can they need to approve each and every variance, or whether they can approve something like we have here, which is a policy, and you know, see what our criteria is and our conditions. It's something that OCC is working on, and I talked to Michael Laufer about it. He's working very diligently, specifically on our pesticide prohibition, which has not yet been approved by US EPA. He did recommend that we pull this portion of the basin plan. I talked to Patty about it. We, you know, there's some pros and cons to doing that. The worst case scenario, it comes back before you again if there's changes that US EPA identifies. But there's the chance that the state board won't approve it if they feel that US EPA isn't going to approve it, or even if they approve it, US EPA may still send it back. So there's nothing that we can do at this point to change the language that I think that would give EPA more comfort. It's really a policy call that they're still struggling with, and they have a rulemaking that's ongoing that could affect this too, so just wanted to let you know about that uncertainty.
I think we should just go ahead with it and see what falls out.
Okay.
I think it would be more, it could be more efficient to do this, and I don't think it's going to be any worse off doing that.
Yeah, I don't see any negative to approving it and then having to change something later. I don't think that it, I think state board may be more uncomfortable with something like that, though.
Is there more evidence that we could bring to the table to support doing it the way we've proposed?
No, I think it's more of a policy issue that's kind of ongoing nationwide. It's not just even a California thing. So it's sort of sorting all that out with US EPA. And US EPA has just kind of been dragging its feet because it's not ready yet to make a decision.
It just may push them a bit.
Yeah, it may.
Other than appearing to be pliable, would there be any upside to actually pulling those sections?
I think the only upside would be for the state board, because then they don't have to take it up. I think that's the only, in thinking about it, that's the only, you know, reason I could think that Michael Offert would recommend that.
And if we pull them, then that would basically mean that those sections would just be absent from our document.
No, we would go back to what we have. Yeah, to what we have currently, which the silly part of it is that all we've done really is consolidate. I mean, we still could basically do what we're doing now. I think we add a little bit more, but it wouldn't be a significant difference.
Can you elaborate more on what the actual difference would be between the way it is now?
The way it is now, we have, region-wide prohibitions. We've consolidated some of those and taken out some of the specific prohibitions, and they're covered now under the region-wide. We already had an exemption to the prohibitions for restoration, and we added one for emergency and sort of a more general exemption.
So if we pulled this section out, we would also remove the exemption for restoration?
No, the restoration already exists.
Okay. Mr. Curtis wants to weigh in on this.
Yeah, the issue is whether these prohibitions and exemption criteria are considered standards under Clean Water Act. That's what EPA is struggling with. The Clean Water Act defines standards as uses of the water and criteria to associate with protection of those beneficial uses generally. So that in our speak, we think of those as beneficial uses and our water quality objectives. there's certainly, if we pulled the prohibition exemption portion of these amendments, we would keep going with the existing basin plan prohibitions and exemption criteria that we have. We continue implementing those until and unless EPA says, no, those are variances to the water quality standards, and for each and every one of those, you have to come to EPA for approval. We think that this is a program that sets up how we're going to protect our water quality, and that these are not standards. Certainly the exemptions in some circumstances could be considered variances. I grant that. But we have been operating with these from probably the 70s, these prohibitions and exemptions, and US EPA has never considered the variances and come to us and said, no, you have to come to us for approval of those. If the EPA required the Water Board to come to the EPA for approval of each and every exemption that we propose granting, it would mean that we would have to specify in our basin plan the discharger, the time, the limits of the applicability of that exemption, and various other things. Then, so a basin plan amendment for each exemption, essentially, then get EPA approval. EPA, you can see how long it's taking for them to think about approving a pesticide prohibition. And you know, for what? If the EPA wanted to go that route, we would simply, I would recommend pulling all of our prohibitions and exemption criteria and simply putting into our various permits or water quality certifications those conditions that the board felt were appropriate for protection of water quality that look very much like our prohibitions and exemption criteria. So I recommend that the board include, do not pull out these prohibitions and exemption criteria. Because really, with the exception of a couple that Kim mentioned, we're really just keeping the same exemptions that we have. We're just eliminating duplication and tweaking them a little bit here and there. And I think that the EPA needs to come to grips with whether this program is an appropriate program for protecting water quality, or if they want to get their hands in the middle of it for no good.
I also want to just give context to the discussion and concur with Chuck's recommendation. These are preliminary discussions by Region 9 staff, and we're beginning to have these dialogues. I think it's important that we proceed with these so we can have this dialogue going forward. I've had some experience with USAPA on the Clean Cars waiver and on the freightership waiver, and those were changes in statute. So they do take a long time. I find it hard to believe that they would ever deal with individual approvals like this. They just do not have the capacity to do that. So, again, it's a preliminary dialogue we've been having with just a handful of Region 9 staff. They've raised an interesting issue, but the dialogue should continue. And I'm not sure if the state board members have been briefed yet either to know what their viewpoints on that.
Mr. Humphrey?
Well, in response to my question then, I don't see where it would serve any of our interests, and I'm not even sure it would serve any of the actual interests of the people who are concerned about what we potentially might be doing here. So I would move that we certify the substitute environmental document, which is offered as a basis to the proposed amendments, and that we approve the proposed amendments as presented initially in the package that we received with the addendums that we got this evening with the last little editorial corrections.
I'll second both of those.
I love your really complete motion. It's great.
Even a blind hog can find.
I just want to say that it's too bad EPA's not here. I'm sorry that we're not able to hear their side of the story.
And they didn't even submit comments.
Yeah, oh, fair enough. But, I mean, frankly, from what Mr. Curtis has said, it's hard for me to believe that this is, I mean, why would they want to do things differently than, I mean, that's crazy. It makes no sense. So, but I mean, there must be some logic from their standpoint, or else they wouldn't be pushing this point. So, anyway, yes.
Speaking on that.
If I could just add one thing. You know, the EPA did approve the State Water Board's implementation policy for toxics. And that includes exemptions that are much similar to what we do in ours. You know, if the discharge meets certain criteria, the State Water Board or this board can grant an exemption to those discharges. And I agree with Kim that this is a similar program that lays out the criteria under which those discharges can go forward. And I'm hoping that we can convince EPA that this is a similar program, that if they want to bless the program as a whole, fine. But don't try to get in the middle of each and every exemption. Thank you.
Thank you. So with that, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried unanimously. Do we want a 10-minute break?